Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
You've got questions. We have answers. Hopefully. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, a mailbag edition. On Saturday, March 19th, Frank Stanfield joined by Chris Towers and Scott White. Scotty, making his return to the mailbag. How's it going, bud?
It's going great. Going great.
Going great. Full transparency, we're recording this on Thursday, St. Patrick's Day. Chris, will you be enjoying a Guinness or maybe another ice-cold beverage on this day?
I will certainly be having some sort of beer. I don't know if it'll be Guinness. I don't really know if the bar that I typically go to has Guinness. I can't remember. So
shame
we'll see.
Them.
You know,
maybe shame
some,
on them.
Maybe some Jameson.
Oh, whoa, all right, Chris.
To celebrate my Irish heritage.
Yeah. Are you Irish?
I don't have any Irish
heritage. All right, I was about to say. If you look real close
Scottish
at my beard.
If you go far enough back.
If you look real close at my beard, I have some red, some orange in here, but you know, you've got to get close. I don't know if you want to get that close. Let's jump right in. We've got some Apple Podcast review questions. We have your emails as well, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And this first one is from I Feel Your Pain. My only for sure keeper is Mike Trout in round one. Keep five of the following in a head-to-head points league. Can keep as long as I want for their previous year's draft value. Undrafted players count towards the latest draft pick that is open. Austin Riley, undrafted. Luis Robert, round 22. Spencer Torkelson, round 17. Zach Wheeler, round 3. Chris Sale, round 11. Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, round 13. Alec Manoah, undrafted. And Noah Syndergaard, round 23. All right, keep five. Scott, what are we thinking?
Riley, Ohtani, Robert. Manoah, and probably Wheeler in round three, though I could be talked out of that.
All right.
Yeah, that's one where I'm not sure Wheeler in round three is a surplus value right now. Obviously, if he's healthy, he would be, but not so much that it would be an obvious value anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you're going to keep a fifth one, he's by far the best player. And so the value doesn't matter all that much. Like, I'd rather have him in the third than Manoah, I think.
Well, Manoah was one I picked, but like Syndergaard in round 23.
Syndergaard in round 23,
really
Sale
kind of
round 11.
You want to make sure your keeper is impactful first and foremost.
Yeah, I think Riley, Robert, Manoah for sure, just based on the value. Ohtani around 13, I like it. Yeah.
If Sale wasn't hurt, it would be Sale over Wheeler for me.
Correct. But yeah.
With that, with the rib strain or the fractured rib, we just, there's no way you can do that.
Yeah, he's going to miss half the season at least, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. Let's go with Zach Wheeler there, round three as the last one. This one's from IMSHNE. Grade the trade. 12-team head-to-head points with 10 keepers. I just received Rafael Devers. I have now traded Marcus Semien and Framber Valdez to get Jose Ramirez. So now I have Devers and Ramirez at third base and my corner infield spot. I was not keeping Valdez, but felt I could flip Semien for a points league monster in Ramirez. I also got a 12th round pick while giving my 13th. So, all right, let's just grade the initial trade here. It is Marcus Semien and Framber Valdez for Jose Ramirez, 12-team head-to-head points.
Yeah, that's an A, I would say. Anytime you can get a first-round caliber player without giving one up.
Let alone you do it. Moving up in a round. You know, he got a 12th for a 13th, so he's also swapping the worst pick for a slightly better one. So
we just did...
A plus.
To put this in perspective, maybe this is a good way of doing it. So we just did a 12-team head-to-head points, same size and format, salary cap draft, and... Ramirez went for $47. Devers went for $33. Framber Valdez went for $9. So just by that measurement, $47 compared to $42. And I don't even think that's necessarily the best way of looking at it, but it's another way of looking at it, and you make out ahead in that too.
All right, this next one is from Jaxico Burris. Dear DeGrom, Darno, and Den Dekker.
Those are former Mets whose first names begin with lowercase d, or last names begin with lowercase d's.
Yeah, it's interesting. Den Dekker,
I think Den Dekker was a Met, right?
Yeah, I think he was.
I think so.
Sounds about right. Interesting. Need help selecting my sixth keeper. We keep six each year as our first six draft picks. 6x6 with OPS added for hitting. Innings pitched, quality starts, K per nine as the... They're like added categories, but they replace some other things that, you know, we're not used to on the pitching side. I'm keeping Bo Bichette, Brandon Woodruff, Starling Marte, Pete Alonso, Jose Altuve. I need one more. Yu Darvish, Kyle Schwarber, Anthony Rendon, and Wilson Contreras. So that would basically be his sixth round pick. Is it worth it?
No.
Well, I wonder if everyone's keeping that many players.
Maybe Schwarber, if you're swapping average for OPS.
OPS is just
added. I guess you're not swapping it, you're adding OPS.
Right.
None of us would take Schwarber in round six, right? It's as simple as that, isn't it?
If it was average instead of if it was OPS instead of average, I think I would. Because you're talking about a potential 900 OPS guy who might hit 240. But with average plus OPS, it becomes a little riskier. He does basically project to be very good or elite in four of the six categories here. You know, home runs, runs, RBI, and OPS.
He's a relative nothing. It depends who you ask, obviously, because if he did project to be elite in all those categories, he wouldn't go as late as he does.
Sure.
All right, so Scott, you're not keeping any?
No.
Yeah, I think I would pass on those.
All right, this next one's from Chai Sox in 22. Can Tony La Russa make it happen? Who knows? Keeper question, 14-team head-to-head, 7x7. Need to keep four, and they represent our first four-round picks. My first three are easy, with Trey Turner, Jose Ramirez, and Juan Soto. Have to choose between Kyle Tucker and Wander Franco, who has eligibility at both third base and shortstop. Which I believe might be the standard on Yahoo, so that's interesting. We haven't really talked about that, but... It definitely helps Wander Franco if he has third base eligibility.
It helps, but I don't think it comes close to bridging this gap unless you're talking about like the next 5 years. But even then, Kyle Tucker's what, 24? He's currently better than Wander Franco. And, you know, I think Wander Franco will develop in time into an elite fantasy option or you know, he has a very good chance to, but based on what we've seen so far, I do have concerns about what kind of fantasy asset he's going to be this season. You know, his like 150 game pace last season was what, 15 homers and four steals, something like that. So I'm not, and like, it wasn't like the underlying numbers suggested that he hit the ball incredibly hard. You know, obviously he's 20, he should get better, but I actually don't think he's going to be a stolen base guy in the majors. I'm not counting on that from him, given the fact that he was like a 55% success rate guy and it's the Rays. So I think Kyle Tucker's the better option here.
It is a 7x7 league, and I assume that two extra hitter categories would elevate Wander Franco quite a bit.
It depends on what they are.
It's really just the 5x5 categories that you know, if he's exactly who he was last year, you wonder if it's going to be enough to live up to his ADP.
Well, I think it depends what those two extra categories
are.
That's
what I'm saying.
They are,
you know, if it's OBP.
They are
probably pretty close.
Hold on. It's runs, home runs, RBI, steals, strikeouts, total bases, OBP.
Yeah.
I think OBP is probably
categories would definitely help Wander Franco's case.
I mean, I think OBP is a wash and total bases is definitely Tucker.
Ultimately, it's not really an argument because Tucker's a first rounder already. So why are you giving up a current first rounder for a hypothetical first rounder?
Yeah. So I guess that makes it easy. We'll go with Kyle Tucker. This one's from Vilwalk79. Dear Earl, Frank, Brooks, Jim, Eddie, and Cal.
Those are Baltimore Orioles.
I definitely cannot name all of them, but you guys
Earl Weaver,
can.
Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken, and Jim
Palmer.
Jim Palmer. That sounds right.
I don't know when we've ever done a six-man podcast, though. So I don't know which of us is supposed to be which here.
That'd get pretty messy pretty quickly.
Yeah.
12-team mixed roto with 5x5 scoring using OBP and saves plus holds. We can keep. We can each keep five players for $3 more than the previous year's contract, leading to pretty high player values in our live auction. I have Vlad for $9, Jose Ramirez for $40, Walker Buehler for $9, and Freddy Peralta for $6. My thoughts on J-Ram is he'll be much more expensive in the auction, and I will be locking down third base. Am I right to keep Ramirez, or should I throw him back and keep an extra of the two keepers mentioned below? So depending on that answer, which one or two? Miles Straw for $4, Jesse Winker for $5, or any of Alex Kirilloff, Ranger Suarez, Framber Valdez, Shane Baz, or Alex Wood for $3.
No, you definitely keep Ramirez. It's yep. No question. And
even a better format for him. OBP instead of average.
Yeah. And even, even if it was just even if you weren't factoring in for inflation because of all the low dollar players being kept in a 12 team roto league, I would expect Ramirez to go for more than $40. So
yeah,
he might go for like $60 in your format.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's the kind of thing where even if you just like look at the total value, $64 for Ramirez, Vlad, Buehler, and Peralta, even if you're paying a little extra for Ramirez, you're locking in two high impact bats, top six picks overall. And in this format, I mean, you can make a not unreasonable case for Ramirez as the number one player in this format because you're going to get similar steals and homer production, probably similar runs and RBI from him as Trey Turner, but probably a better OBP, right? Or at least very close.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be close because obviously the batting average is lower, but the walk rate is higher. So it's probably close to a wash there. He does need one more keeper between Straw for $4, Winker $5, Kirilloff, Ranger Suarez, Framber Valdez, Baz, and Wood for $3. I think even though we're all not really excited about Winker, he's probably the best value at $5.
Yeah, I think you could consider Shane Baz as like a now and future value because I think he's probably valued as more than a $3 player by all of us. And, you know, obviously there's the potential for him to be a $20 player next year or more. So I think I would go. I might just go Baz.
What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I think I agree with Chris.
All right.
I considered Straw just because OBP is his better format. So he is a better option here. And, you know, for $4, that could him and Ramirez could go a long way to making sure you don't have to worry about stolen bases.
It's a nice combo with Vlad, too, because, you know, Vlad's not giving you any speed and obviously gives you so much power. So,
yeah, so I would consider Straw as well. I might have Straw over Winker at $4 versus $5.
All right. This next one is not
strictly an OBP.
This next one's not a question, but I had to ask about it because I don't know about this story. This one's
hang on a second. Hang on a second. Winker's better in OBP too, even more so than Straw is. Winker's one of the best players in baseball.
Yes, he has a very good OBP. However, with Straw, the idea would be that you're locking in a potential elite stolen base guy who's helpful in OBP. That's my thought. Whereas Winker, yes, he's very good in OBP. He's going to give you a very good OBP. But as we talked about the other day, you know, I think the counting stats might be pretty lackluster. And so I think there's a chance that Winker's like
the counting a stats
good hitter who's an OBP specialist.
Obviously going to be lackluster in Straw's case, though. I mean, it's...
Sure. But it's the stolen base scarcity.
My Tout Wars draft is 15-teamer, but it replaced OBP with batting average. Winker went in round 3. I don't think he should have gone in round 3, but he went in round 3, which goes to show you...
That's fair.
You know, he gets on base a ton.
Do you know where Straw went in that draft, Scott, offhand? I mean, I'm sure it's much later than when Winker did.
Much later, yeah. Round 10 or beyond, I'm not sure.
I saw a report recently, too. One of the beat writers for Seattle said that they expect Winker to play more against left-handed pitching this season. So he's very bad against lefties. I think we have enough of a sample of just his major league career against lefties. It's quite bad. So maybe that even brings down the overall numbers, the overall batting average and OBP for Jesse Winker this upcoming season. As I mentioned, this next one is not a question, but some kind of story that I've got to find out about. This one's from Frank Hippolito. Big fan of Scott White. I still smile whenever I think about that time he was chased down by a scary clown.
Oh my gosh. I do not smile thinking about that. That was one of a handful of moments in my life where I had the honest thought, I might be about to die here, you know, like that. Probably 3 or 4 moments in my life like that. That was one of them. Yeah, it was terrifying.
Well, Scott, can we get some deets? Because I don't know the story.
Oh, I don't know if I want to relive it, but okay. So I was, you know, I was leaving. We lived in an apartment at the time. I was leaving my apartment for whatever reason. There's this tree right outside between the apartment and where my car was parked. I glanced over at the tree, I guess, because I saw some color or some movement or whatever, and kind of standing behind the tree, like, she was hiding like she was hiding, but the tree was too narrow. Like the tree was, it's like a skinny tree. So it was a bad job of hiding, like kind of pretending like I'm hiding, but I'm not really hiding, you know? And it's this clown made up all like scary, like though, you know, like scary facial paint and everything, like purposely scary looking clown. And I look at her and she grins at me. And she starts walking toward me. I freaked out and ran. Because that's a rational response, right?
Was this Halloween or just like a random day?
No. But do you remember in the news a few years ago? It was like this trend of like these packs of clowns terrorizing people. You remember?
That sounds familiar.
And that this happened when that was going on.
I don't blame you, man.
I mean, it was broad daylight, but still. That's what happened.
Jeez.
This was like 4 or 5 years ago.
All right, Chris really liked that one. Chris is like falling out of his chair for those watching on YouTube right now. YouTube.com/fantasychrisfulton.
I had the exact same reaction the first time I heard this.
It's terrifying.
It is. Not even Halloween either. That is.
And the thing
wild.
Is, like, I didn't know, like, I ran back to my apartment and I'm like, why would I run here? This is just leading the maniacal clown back to my family. Like, I didn't know what to do. But like, the clown came and knocked on our door, and my wife answered, even despite my pleas for her not to. and it was the neighbor.
What?
The neighbor. I don't know why the neighbor was dressed up as a clown.
That adds a whole other element to the story. Like, well, Scott's,
you
know, there begging,
you know,
his wife.
You live in an apartment, your neighbors are constantly changing. It's not like we were having block parties or anything. But. Yeah.
All right.
I know what to tell you. I was lucky to make it out of that one.
I'm happy you did, Scott. Here today, We need you on the pod. We need to answer more questions. So we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, emails here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so let's answer some of your emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. That is the letter I. This one's from Elliot. Dear Wayne, Derry, and Squirrely Dan. Wayne.
No, this is one that I feel like if I knew it, I would know it.
This
if
is,
you know, you know.
It looks like something called Letter Kenny. No idea.
Okay.
How
much? My friends were very into that. I've never watched it.
No idea. How much do you guys think about, quote, stacking when making your picks as a draft progresses, as in choosing two batters on the same team that are close in the batting order might mutually benefit from the RBI and runs produced in a single play? I'm guessing Chris has looked up some math on this somewhere on how much of an impact it really has. Of course, this comes to mind because I was able to keep Trey Turner this season, and now I'm wondering if I should be aggressive in getting Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts in the second round. I also think there may be opportunities later in the draft to stack Yankees or Blue Jays. I had Lindor and J-Ram in 2018 and felt like I was constantly experiencing double happiness. Do you find yourself reaching for players in a draft that would give you a stack?
No. No, this feels like more of a fantasy football thing.
Well, it's a the way I would look at it is it potentially increases the like total upside of your team if you know Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman both have high variance or high outcome seasons, you know, but that would also be true if you just had them on your team, you know?
Like right.
I think where it can make more of an impact would be in obviously DFS is where this concept really comes from, but also weekly leagues. You know, you could have scenarios where you have an especially good week because you have players on the same team who all go off at the same time. However, it shouldn't be more than a tiebreaker. Like, I think Freddie Freeman is fine to draft in the second round. And if you took Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts at the 1-2 turn, I think that would be a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But that's also because I have them ranked that high. It's not because you have Trey Turner. Yeah. So that's very minor tiebreaker at best.
The idea behind it in DFS is your if that team happens to have a great night, then your team will benefit. But like when you're talking about a full season, the context of a full, like, players are going to end up with the numbers they end up with irrespective of what.
Yeah.
I mean, baseball is kind of weird because it's a team sport, but it's also an individual sport. So every player does what he does independently of what's happening around him. And yeah, there's some with runs and RBI there's some, there's some degree of lineup context mattering and all of that, but not to a major degree.
The biggest thing is those things are already baked into their prices.
Right.
So in a season long roto, especially, I don't think it really matters at all. Except that it, I guess, slightly increases the chances of like a truly huge outcome for your team, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now you brought this up recently, Frank, that you've had times before where you invested in too many Rockies hitters.
Right.
And so when they were on the road, your whole lineup suffered. So there may be something to that. very specific scenario where, you know, that one park where everybody's much worse on the road than they are at home.
Or like you could envision a scenario where like the Phillies draw the short straw and they end up having to face Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom every single time they face the Mets, you know, in all six series that they play against them. But I don't know, even then.
You can't anticipate that in the draft.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point that you bring up, Scott, especially in head-to-head leagues with, you know, any kind of weekly scoring. I remember there was one year I had either two or three Rockies hitters on my team, and it just, you know, when they were on the road, it just completely sank me. So I would say keep that in mind when playing in weekly lineups. You know, too many Rockies could be not a great idea. So it's kind of a slippery slope. Like, you don't want to put too much value. Obviously, you want to target hitters on good teams, but again, that's baked into their price. Use it as a tiebreaker, but not much more than that. This one's from Andrew in Norwich in the United Kingdom. Hi, Boomer, Monkey, and LaFonda.
I looked this up, and I know what it is now that I looked it up. These are Marc Maron's cats. Marc Maron, the comedian and podcaster.
Gotcha.
Who ends his podcast, WTF, by shouting, Boomer lives. That's the context in which I understand it.
Gotcha. All right. Love the show. I have a couple of questions. I play in a standard 5x5 roto league, except it saves plus holds. Should this elevate those relievers in committee situations, as if they don't end up being closers, they are likely to pick up holds? And if so, anyone you'd recommend? So,
Andrew Kittredge immediately comes to mind.
Yeah. That's like two-thirds of bullpens in baseball, basically.
It does. It's always worth pointing out that holds are not accumulated as quickly as saves are. Like, yes. The saves leaders are always going to be higher than the holds leaders.
There were only three
over 10.
Only three relievers with 30 plus holds last season. So
yeah.
It's even worse than saves.
So they're not equal. Just when they're combined into one category, that doesn't mean they're equal. But yeah, I think
it does broaden the pool of potential options.
Yes.
And because it takes someone like Devin Williams and makes him a good source of holds with the upside to be a great source of saves plus holds, which is what someone like Paul Sewald had last season when he had, what, 11 or 14 saves, something like that.
And specifically, I think it elevates the value of the guys who, you know, are at least going to factor in the closer role, even if they aren't the true closer. David Bednar, maybe.
Giovanni Gallegos.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't last, which I think there's a good chance he's just more or less the closer, but if he doesn't last in that role, which is possible as well, then, you know, he'll be getting a lot of holds.
The Mariners guys too. I mean, Ken Giles, Diego Castillo, Paul Sewald.
Yeah,
I think are in that mix. A few other names. The Marlins situation. You know, I've seen some rumbling, some whispers recently that they may want to work Anthony Bender in there. So whoever doesn't win the role, I guess, Floro or Bender, they should provide good ratios regardless. Not that they're on a winning team or anything. I think more often than not, like, you want to, just in this format, you want to target relievers that have lots of strikeouts, good ratios, and are on good teams, because
basically
that means they're probably going to give you either holds or saves in that scenario. So
in a saves plus holds league, I think basically what it does is it just makes those elite non-closers more valuable, and it pushes them closer to the elite closers. So, you know, if someone like Devin Williams, you know, if you think he's going to throw 70 elite innings and get 110 strikeouts, you know, he might end up with 10, 15 fewer saves plus holds than someone like Giovanni Gallegos, who, if he stays the closer the whole season, but it dramatically shrinks the gap in value between the two of them. And I think it probably makes the elite closers less valuable. In a saves plus holds league, you shouldn't see this mad rush for the handful of sure thing closers that we usually see.
All right. He does have a second question. I've been doing my standard draft prep, and as always, I find it easy and interesting to get excited about the top 100, 110 picks. Then I hit a bit of a wall and look at players who are just a bit blah. I tend to find my mind wandering to those deep sleeper slash breakout guys and can find myself getting interested and exciting again. In drafts, I always look at this stretch 110 to 200-ish and just knowing nothing about them and not being excited to take them and making bad choices on the spot or reaching far too early for my sleeper slash breakout guys. How do you get interested in this tier of players? What do you look for at this range? This isn't the first time I've heard this too. I've had some other people tweet at me saying like, they look forward to drafting picks 200 rather than like the 150 yeah. to 200
range. I 100% feel that way.
Yeah. So and what do you it's so what do you do?
The further down in the draft you get, the less difference there is between each round. Like once you hit probably this range, mm-hmm. your chances of any given pick hitting are probably no better than a coin flip. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to drop a decent amount of the guys you draft between 120 and 200 anyway. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's
that. That's why I've always subscribed to a stars and scrubs approach in auction salary cap drafts, because of precisely that. I mean, you could spend $12 on a guy that you're likely to drop, or you could spend $1 on a guy you're likely yeah. to drop. You know,
so I think a lot of it depends on what your team build is. I like taking pitchers in that range personally. You know, my preferred draft strategy is probably two pitchers in the first 100 picks, two or three maybe. And then I start loading up on the higher upside pitchers that I like in that range. Like, you know, Trevor Rogers, if he lasts, Tyler Mahle, you know, fill in the blank with your personal picks, Patrick Sandoval, Alex Cobb.
Yeah.
But that's usually just because pitchers are so volatile and the historical data suggests that there isn't that much difference between like the 60 to 100 range at starting pitcher than the 100 through 140. And so that's generally my approach.
And you all, in our recent mock draft, Chris, I think you ended up taking like O'Neill Cruz in round 13, and there was somebody that you elevated significantly like that. I can't remember now. We were kind of giving you a hard mm-hmm. time about it.
I think it was Carrasco.
On the YouTube channel. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
But it's, there comes a point, and I don't know if it's quite there. It may be mm-hmm. a little after that for me, but there comes a point where, you know, just take the guys you want most, you know, mm-hmm. particularly if it's high upside guys like that, particularly if it's shallower league like that. Yeah. And not worry so much about ADP. I mean, you think about ADP because obviously you want to maximize the return from every pick, and you're trying to, like, create this perfect path to the end of the draft where you get everybody you want at the most optimal place to get them. But right. what naturally happens as draft season nears opening day is those guys all tend to get elevated because somebody like Chris did in that mock is just like, screw it, I'm going to take him because I want him.
Yeah, ADP matters a lot less in the last week of drafts. And this is true in every sport. If you do enough drafts, you'll notice that, you know, most of your first, you know, most of the drafts are pretty predictable. And you can say, all right, this guy's going to go in this range. Once you get to the last, like, week and everybody's been drafting forever and it's, you know, we tend to split to draft more of our leagues that we're playing out. That's when you start to see people just like, screw it. I'm not going to play the game and risk missing out on a guy who I really like. I'm just going to go get the guy. And it
drives me nuts. My last few teams I draft are always the ones I feel worst about because, like, people stop following the script. And so I don't know what to anticipate anymore.
You know, I think there's a philosophical thing where you talk a lot about how you rank not just in the order that you think guys will finish, but where you need to take them.
Right.
And so you try to avoid what I did with O'Neill Cruz, where I moved him up to 150 just because that's the range where it's like, okay, I'm going to get O'Neill Cruz and I like the player and I like the upside and I'm just going to mm-hmm. make him a priority. And so, you know, I think that's a philosophical difference, but once people start going off script, you know, like the head to head league we did last week when, I mean, every single pitcher was drafted seemingly and like in the first 10 rounds.
Yeah. We were taking like Dane Dunning at the end of this 12 yeah, team.
I think I took Patrick Sandoval in like the 10th or 12th round or something, which is way before his ADP suggests. But, there also has to be that flexibility. So, it also depends on how the draft is going.
All right. This next one is from Ben. Dear Chris, Robert, Chris, and Mark. Those are Marvel.
It's in my second grade class. I don't know.
Marvel superhero actors?
That's the Avengers, the OG original four.
Mm-hmm.
Big four, I guess.
Head-to-head league, 5x5 with OBP instead of average. 12 teams. We keep 5 each with no cost. So assume top 60 and ADP will be kept. My keepers are Trout, Bichette, Corbin Burns, and Paul Goldschmidt. Should my fifth keeper be Salvador Perez or Josh Hader? I'm scared to keep a catcher because I've kept Sanchez and Real Muto in 2018 and 2019, and both times have gotten burned.
Did Real Muto burn you in 2020?
He was 2019. He was like a high 700s OPS bet. I guess.
Like, Salvador Perez was obviously better than. So in 2020, JT Realmuto had an 840 OPS. It was a career high 840 OPS. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's saying he got burned keeping Realmuto in 2019. But Perez is in a different class than Realmuto was then or Sanchez was the year before. Like they may have been the top ranked catcher going into the next season because somebody had to be. But like Salvador Perez is just so far ahead of the
crop. We all have Sal above Goldschmidt, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
I definitely do.
It's an OBP league, so it's worth mentioning Salvador Perez does lose value in this format.
That does hurt Sal a little bit, but there aren't that many catchers who are helpful in OBP, so I'm not sure it changes. But yeah, he is a legitimately bad OBP guy. He was above 300 OBP last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but not. But like, I think it was like around 320.
Yeah,
it was 316.
There you go.
Not great, but yeah, go with Salvador Perez. This next one is from Nick. In a 10-team head-to-head points league with daily lineups, if you think the calf is healed, is it fair to consider Mike Trout over guys like Vlad and Jose Ramirez? 10-team head-to-head points daily lineups.
I can't confidently say Trout will be worse than those guys. No, he feels riskier. But he's been the best hitter in baseball for the last decade when he's been playing. So, and when you're talking about a points league where it doesn't really matter if the guy gives you steals, then it's easier to justify Trout over Ramirez in that case. So look, if you're really confident, if you're really not going to, If you're not that worried about Trout's health, then it's fine to do this. But I feel like you need to have a little bit of concern there.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you guaranteed every player was going to play 162 games, Mike Trout might just be the number one pick. Yeah. He's still, like, that good of a hitter.
Especially in a point. Yeah, especially in a points league.
You know, like Scott said, there's risk. And obviously there's risk for everyone. But Ramirez in particular has not had many injury issues. Vlad has had a couple over the course of the 3 years he's been in the majors. So I don't want to say there's no injury risk there. I don't know if you have to take Trout over those guys. And in a 10-team league, like, he might just be there in the second round.
Mm.
Not late in the second.
Not late in the second. Possible, but he could fall to like 15, depending on where you're picking.
It's possible. It's possible.
Just give me a name for this second question. In round two, which injury risk are you most eager to draft? Ronald Acuna, Jacob deGrom, Shane Bieber.
Well, I have Acuna ranked highest of them, so Ronald Acuna.
Even in a points league?
Points league?
Even in a points league. deGrom might be ahead of him in a points league.
I think I do have deGrom ranked ahead of Bieber, but he says eager to draft, so I'll say Bieber.
All right. This was from Anthony. Dear Johan, Francisco, Brad, and Jim.
Those are pitchers from the mid-2000s Twins.
Santana.
I don't know if were they all starters? Francisco Liriano.
Liriano.
Brad Radke.
Brad Radke. Was he on that era?
Jim?
I think he was around then still. Yeah.
Jim something. I don't know.
All right. Are you at all concerned about players like Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, etc., who remain unsigned in terms of slow starts this season? Would this be any reason to drop them in the rankings? Do you feel differently about starting pitchers who remain unsigned?
Well, all the big starting pitchers have been signed now.
Right.
I think like Michael Pineda is still out there, but nobody were that interested in fantasy. Zach Greinke was the last one. So I don't think I worry about them any more than any other pitcher who's basically getting 3 weeks to ramp up since they have signed. Players who haven't signed at all yet, look, the longer it takes them to sign, the more concerned I'm going to be. But I don't think we're there yet. I mean, by the end of this weekend, they may have all signed.
Yeah, I've heard some whispers about Trevor Story's elbow. Apparently dealt with an elbow injury last year, and some people being worried about that. So, I don't know. Maybe teams are worried as well.
I'm looking up the mid to late 2000s Minnesota Twins pitchers, and I was reminded of a fantastic baseball name. Boof Bonser.
Boof Bonser.
Long live Boof Bonser. I can't figure out who Jim was, though.
Jim. Yeah, I don't know. All right.
It was Brad Radke.
Hey, we got a little Scott White Jr. Yes. There on the broadcast.
Yes, we do.
Let's we'll hit one more and then we'll get out of here.
He had something very important to hand to me. A piece of paper he found on his bedroom floor.
Is it another drawing of Freddie Freeman?
No, it's not. That was not his drawing. That was the other one's drawing.
This one's from Scott Wolf. Hey, guys, real quick. I have the number 4 pick in my draft. Head-to-head categories, OBP instead of batting average. And my plan was to take Jose Ramirez if he's available. But I just noticed Mookie Betts has second base eligibility on Yahoo. Would you take a dual eligible Mookie over Ramirez? Or is that getting too cute?
I would take Ramirez. Too cute. Second base isn't that bad.
I agree. It might be closer for Chris. Chris, I know you're very excited about Betts.
I think Mookie Betts is going to have a big bounce back season, and OBP helps, certainly. But no, I think I would still take Ramirez over him.
All right. We are sweeping the floor. Jose Ramirez across the board. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching this mailbag edition of Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.